Welcome to Pundits on the Porch, brought to you by the James Madison Institute, Florida's oldest and largest free market think tank, where we discuss freedom, culture, and the future of Florida.
Hello, I'm Sal Nuzzo.
Bob McClure with James Madison Institute.
And this is Pundits on the Porch, our JMI weekly podcast. We are pleased to be here from the offices of the James Madison Institute at the Columns here in Tallahassee. Real happy to have a great interviewee today, Congressman Neil Dunn from Florida's 2nd District.
Yeah, and the thing I love about these kinds of interviews, whether it's Grover or Mary Catherine or Guy, or in this case Congressman Dunn, I like to get to the real stuff, get beyond cable news,
yep.
You know, hear what their true thoughts are, what's it really like, you know, in the halls of Congress, what's your daily life like, you know, moving back and forth between the districts. So it's and to have a conservative Washington perspective who has stood shoulder to shoulder with the president mm-hmm. and stood shoulder to shoulder with the speaker, I think it makes for a great interview.
But who also came out of the private sector.
Yeah.
I mean, a guy who
was
an accomplished doctor who had conservative values and principles and now tries to bring them to the swamp, which I just returned from, and it lived up to its moniker.
You know, we get, as you know, a lot of opportunity to go to Washington, mm-hmm. D.C. because we're at a think tank in what is really ground zero for policy in the country, Florida, right?
Yep.
Demographically diverse, rural, and it's growing. It's all this kind of thing. So you were just up there. We've probably been up there, what, 10 or 12 times since this current administration took office?
Yeah. I want to say probably close to a dozen times. This time we were coming in to talk specifically about in the absence of the repeal and replace effort for Obamacare, what can states be doing to work with the administration through executive orders, with the Department of Health and Human Services through things like Medicaid waivers?
Right.
There are some innovative states out there that are doing some great policy, and really the White House now, because of the fact that Congress wasn't able to kind of follow through with the repeal and replace effort, the White House is now even more so looking at states and to the policy organizations to say, all right, we need to do this, because they failed to repeal and replace Obamacare doesn't mean that the bad effects of Obamacare just stop.
Right.
So I was with a number of different states, Michigan, Ohio, Kentucky, some others that are doing really great things with their Medicaid programs that are working to establish some of those association health plans and things like that. And those are things that we're going to hear from Congressman Dunn about as well.
Yeah, and given the size of the state of Florida and the diversity of the state of Florida, we really have an opportunity to have one of the loudest voices from the 50 states in Washington, D.C.
And I think one of the most impactful, too, when you look at the fact that we're
influence.
We're more than 20 million people. We have an insanely diverse population. We have to deal with the issues surrounding Medicare more than most other states. Our Medicaid population skews primarily toward children and the elderly. All of those things come into play in Florida in ways that most other states don't work to, and we've been able to have a seat at the table, literally at the vice president's table, just this past week.
Well, let's get to Congressman Dunn, shall we?
Absolutely.
We have the great privilege today to have Congressman Neil Dunn from District 2. Congressman, thank you for being here.
It's great to be here with you, Bob.
We are in our next phase of Pundits on the Porch with the James Madison Institute, a podcast that we started a couple of months ago. And so we're really grateful that you're able to be our guest today.
I'm honored.
Several questions. We always hit the hard ones first that I wanted to chat with you about. I think the opportunity for our listeners to kind of see what actually really happens in Washington is going to be a fascinating opportunity today, beyond cable news, beyond kind of what they read and see. But before we get to that, tell me a little bit about your district. It's pretty unique. It's pretty sprawling. Tell me about your district and the folks in your district.
So this is actually the largest district east of the Mississippi River. It goes from on the west end from Panama City Beach to on the east end all the way around down to Ocala and Yankee Town.
Mm-hmm.
Dunellen is in the district. So it's a big chunk of land, about 350 miles across as the crow flies, over 1,000 miles of shoreline. And a lot of people in the ditch, great people, conservative people, but they're thin on the ground.
Yeah. Wow. Fascinating. What constant or consistent message do you hear from your folks on the ground?
So it's easy. The most common message I hear from everybody is get the government off my back and I'll create jobs. Just get out of my way. Everything you've got in Washington, give me less of it and I'll be happy. So nobody's really looking for a handout. They're looking for just get the government off my back.
Wow. That's a
good group.
Yeah.
That's easy to please them if we can get the government off their back.
That's right. That'd be great. That'd be great. Well, good. Coming from the outside, obviously you were a doctor and MD in Bay County for years and years and years. Yep. Coming from the outside as a relatively new congressman, is it what you thought it was going to be? Is it different? Is it similar? Tell us.
I didn't have the frame of reference actually to know what it would be, but I will say that. I was surprised how many good, honest, hardworking people there are in Washington trying to do the right thing. I tell people we have a lot of them, almost enough of them.
Yeah.
Almost. It really is. So there's a lot of talent up there trying to do the right thing. So it's surprising. There's a lot of time involved in the thing. So as a doctor, you put in long hours, but you also get to hand off the call to somebody else. Say, okay, you know, this is your weekend on call, Paul. Bob, this is mine. You know, every weekend is on call here. So it's a little different that way.
Yeah. So your average week, do you 7 days? How much time do you spend in D.C.? How much do you spend in the district? You fly in and out of Panama City. How does that work? I think people would be interested in that kind of thing.
Because it's so sprawling, actually, is a little special in that regard. We're back in the district just about every single weekend, but I might fly into any one of 5 different commercial airports. So I may not see my house for a month, but I'll fly into either Tallahassee, Gainesville, Jacksonville, Tampa, Ocala, and of course Panama City.
Wow.
And we'll work at one end of the district for a few days and back to Washington.
Let's shift topics just a little bit. We talk a lot about, you know, the need or the desire for bipartisanship, for people to work across the aisle. I know it seems when we watch cable news or we read the newspaper, it's not happening at all. Do you have friends in the Democratic Party? Do you work across party aisles? Do you think that's kind of a unicorn idea that could never happen? Or tell us more about that.
I said good news for you on that, actually. We work across the aisle virtually every single day. I filed 13 bills, and all 13 have at least one Democrat sponsor. I've been able to find that somebody over there who come to us. And by the way, we've passed more laws in this Congress in the first year of our presidency than any Congress since Truman was president.
Wow.
That's a long time. So there's a lot of things being done. And this is surprising to people, 2/3 of all those laws are bipartisan. They have Democrat and Republican co-sponsors. So I'm betting you didn't hear that on the cable news.
You're right.
So in addition to that, there's 443. I happen to know the number we watched this closely. 443 bills the House has passed that are sitting in the Senate waiting to be taken up by the Senate, and they're bogged down in the confirmation process so they can't get to all the bills. But and 2/3 of those are also bipartisan. So there's a lot of action over there, a lot of big ability to walk across the aisle. Now, there are certain bills that get locked down, and you know the ones.
Sure.
Nancy Pelosi or Chuck Schumer say, no crossing the aisle. There's no crossing the aisle. But that's from their side. We never get locked down. Our leadership always says, vote your heart, vote your conscience, vote your district, but don't lie to me about how you're going to vote.
Right.
That's it.
That's a fascinating contrast in leadership style.
Yeah, I think it is. And I'm glad, of course, it makes me glad that I'm on the side I'm on.
Right. Side of truth, we say here.
Yes, that's exactly right.
We'll turn to policy in just a second. One more quick question for you, kind of about the dynamics of moving from the private sector to D.C. What has surprised you most about your first term in Congress? It could be in your district. It could be in D.C., any of those kinds of things. What has surprised you most?
Certainly, the sheer number of people who are talented in Washington is a great thing to find. I think also I would say that there's vitriol in the hardcore resistance that doesn't seem to have any anchor in common sense. People ask me what's the difference between practicing surgery and being in Congress, and well, the hours aren't that different, but I get a lot more death threats.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that's fascinating. All right, let's turn to policy. Just a few things I want to chat with you about that I think our listeners would really like, kind of the inside baseball view. Obviously, the recent omnibus bill, budget, call it what we will. I know there's some discussion of interpretation of how President Trump will be able to use those funds. Senator Schumer's threatened lawsuit if he tries to build a border wall with it. All, you know, that's subject to interpretation. But I do know for a lot of conservatives, and certainly in our free market think tank world, and perhaps in your district as well, it did give some heartburn to some of your voters and some of your listeners here. Walk us through kind of your observation of maybe the process, and then kind of some of the insights you shared with me earlier today when we were talking offline.
Sure, happy to do that. So I think if you don't have heartburn with this bill, you're unusual. I will say that the House actually passed all of the appropriations bills that it was supposed to appropriate. That's 12 every year in September. And we did that after a lot of hard work and debate in the House. So the House, which is supposed to initiate all the appropriations bills, and we did. We had those there, and they sat there for 6 months in front of the Senate before the Senate could manage to cobble together some sort of response. And that response was to lard up our 12 bills with $300 billion in additional spending and stick in all kinds of things that none of us would really wanted to see. And then what they did is put a gun to the head of the military and say, okay, you know, you pass this or we just got the military again. And you know, to remind you, the military has been on the sequester most of the time since 2011. And that's a 25% per year cut on military spending, which literally sends our troops down range in war without the support that they need to, not just to win, but just to stay alive.
Wow,
so we're literally killing our troops. And that's a subject close to my heart because my wife and I have a son who was very, very far out on the tip of the spear.
Right.
And so we have to take care of that. Have to.
Regardless, I know a lot of our listeners will be all over the place on immigration, to be all over the place on the border wall. But you talked about the border wall offline. Tell us a little bit more, because that is some discussion, I think, whether they support it or don't support it. I think understanding that issue as it relates to this bill, I think, would be a fascinating point.
So one thing to do with the border wall is actually go down and talk to the border police and ask them how they feel about a wall. And they say, yes, we want some wall because we need some, there's some gaps. So in the omnibus, there's funding for 90 miles of border wall. Where that goes is up for grabs. But I think the Border Patrol has an idea where they would like to see it. And that seems like a logical place to put those physical barriers. There's a lot of other things we can do on the border to guard the border. I will just say that if I'm sitting in Florida, which I am, a border wall looks a lot like a bunch of Coast Guard cutters.
Yeah.
And we did fund that in the omnibus as well. So we're building a whole bunch of new Coast Guard cutters. And gratifyingly enough, we're building them right here in the 2nd Congressional District.
There you go. That's great. Let's turn to healthcare. Obviously, something that is near and dear to you. We didn't quite get across the finish line with Obamacare.
That was a shame. You know, we lost that in the Senate by a single vote two times. That was really disappointing because we worked hard in the House to get that over there. They had a good plan. The Graham-Cassidy plan was a good plan. Either one of those could have been passed with the Senate, and we missed by a single vote. That's pretty unforgivable.
Where do you think we go from here at the federal level on health care?
Well, we have to address it because it's a very broken system. Nobody can afford this thing. So we will address it. I don't think that we can get 60 votes to actually repeal Obamacare. So this year we're going to be working at looking at some of the things that we can do, association health plans, decreasing the mandates. Of course, we got rid of the mandate to buy and the penalties for that. And I think there's things we can do to make it more affordable and work better for people. But until we get a new Senate, we probably won't be able to do the sweeping changes that we want to do and we tried to do last year.
Right. That's and the Senate, I think, will one way or the other look very different after the November election because there's
I think so.
Yeah, one way or the other. Yeah, no, I understand. I do. Couple more questions. I know you have to get on the road. When examining a piece of legislation, what kind of lenses do you use to determine how you're going to vote, and how much does outside pressure play or whip play in those kinds of discussions?
Great question. I'm going to start off by saying the first thing to ask is this a federal, is this a bill that should be in the federal hands? Is it something that belongs in the federal government? Is it in our wheelhouse or should it be done in the state? Or should it be done at all? Next question, is it necessary? Is this a good law? And what are the unintended consequences? Because a lot of unintended consequences. Right. Almost every bill, and I've submitted 13 now, I had to refine them quite a bit before I found that they didn't do any harm to anybody. And so sometimes you have to be careful with everything that comes to you on that. You don't just say yes because it feels good. Those are the first lenses. And then second, you have to look and see who's getting hurt, who's getting helped, and what's the cost to the taxpayers. So we look at all those things and try to put together and rule, you know, laws with a light hand, a light touch, and you actually have to submit with every bill now a statement that says what part of the Constitution authorizes you to, you at the federal government, to actually enact a law like this. So they require us to, right. That's a new requirement. That's kind of fun, and I'm glad we do that.
That's great. You see these folks like Speaker Ryan and President Trump on TV all the time, and it's natural to kind of draw a conclusion based on kind of the shallow nature of cable television. You've met with both. You've been shoulder to shoulder with both clearly. Quick observation about each gentleman.
So I will tell you that, and this may not be a popular comment, Paul Ryan is just exactly as bright as he appears to be. Very, very bright. He's also as nice as he appears to be.
So he does always smile.
He does always smile because, it's a tough job. He's the reluctant speaker.
Right.
He's the guy who they had to talk him into it. And I think he has a saying. He says, I'm going to quote him on this. He said, being speaker is a lot like walking through a graveyard. There's a lot of people underneath you, but nobody's listening.
Yeah.
It's frustrating. It's a very frustrating job, I think. Especially for a guy who wants to play by rules.
Right.
So he's not a top down. He's not locking down anybody's votes. He will talk to you. He'll try to have rationalize why it puts his point of view versus yours. But nobody loses committee positions and stuff like that because of those things. So he's a reasonable guy. I have had some exposure to the president as well, and the president was actually, fortunately, we've been on the same side of everything. So it's been a pleasant interaction. The most pleasant interaction was he invited about a dozen or so over to a movie in the White House a few weeks ago. It was the Paris, the 716 to Paris, where the three American soldiers actually intercepted a terrorist and saved the whole train there, and they got shot up and hurt, but they were honored by the French government. And the actual soldiers who were in the movie, who did the deed, were starring in the movie, and they came to the White House for the movie show at the same time. So we had a great, we're all eating popcorn together watching the movie. It was a lot of fun.
That's great. That's terrific.
Yeah. So that's a feel good moment in Washington.
For yeah. Me. Yeah. Clearly, Washington's a great place to visit. Most Americans never want to live there. You have the burden of doing so for part of your business and weekly life. But it's beautiful. It's a majestic kind of testament to the history of our country. What are some of the great monuments and museums that you really like there?
My favorite tours of the monuments are the veterans' monuments. When the honor flights come up, and they tend to start at the World War II monument, the reception that they get by the crowds is just, it's very moving. It's heartwarming. You see the crowds divide, and they just give standing applause to the veterans as they're helping each other through the monuments. So you have the younger veterans pushing the older veterans in their wheelchairs, and they're so humble, and they don't know what's everybody applauding about. Well, it's for them. And so that's always a moving thing, and they tend to do the tour down around through the Korean War veteran and memorial, rather, in the Vietnam as well. So I love that. There's nothing quite as moving as that. I get a lot of FaceTime in the Smithsonian because we're on the committee that oversees their budget. So we look and see how they're spending their money. So some great times there. I'll arrange a tour for you if you come.
Love to do that.
But the most ornamental building, the one that's sort of over the top in the city, is probably the Library of Congress, which was purpose-built to impress the Europeans that we could build buildings like that. Right. So that's a great place to come in and just sit down and read for a little while. Yeah. I'd love to show you around.
I'll take you up on that.
Thanks so much.
Congressman Neil Dunn, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me. It's an honor.
Well, that was enlightening.
You know, Congressman Dunn is, he's just a real guy. He's just a real person, you know?
Yep.
And, you know, it's refreshing to be able to talk to some of these folks in an intimate setting on the porch here at the Columns at the James Madison Institute, to have them on our podcast, Pundits on the Porch, and just to kind of see and hear what actually goes on.
And one of the things that, given the size of the 2nd Congressional District in Florida and how geographically vast it is, I love the fact that he is so accessible. He's so willing to come and speak, and not just to folks that he agrees with. I mean, right. This is a guy who does town halls all over the district. He takes questions from whomever comes. He is a great, jovial guy. He is always positive, always optimistic, and just really a treat to participate with.
I agree. It was, you know, this is why I'm really excited about this initiative. It's different. It's an opportunity to reach more folks with this, in this kind of venue, but it also allows these men and women to you know, have a cup of coffee, to sit on the porch here at the Columns and just talk shop. And I think that's what really excites me about this.
Yeah, absolutely. Looking forward to future episodes. I, again, am Sal Nuzzo. This is Dr. Bob McClure with the James Madison Institute, our Pundits on the Porch podcast. Look forward to the next episode coming up in about a week. And thank you very much.
You've been listening to another episode of Pundits on the Porch. I'm Logan Padgett, Director of Communications and Public Affairs for the James Madison Institute. We encourage you to subscribe to our podcast channel and connect with us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and by visiting our website at jamesmadison.org.